All right, today is Tuesday, October 13th, 2020, and this is Delaney Bauer speaking with Jennifer Albritton. A reminder that this interview is for the Kentucky Oral History Commission's COVID-19 in Kentucky Oral History Project, which is funded through a Kentucky Humanities Council CARES grant. This project seeks to document the global coronavirus pandemic through the diverse experiences of Kentuckians. And today you'll be sharing your own personal connection to the COVID-19 crisis as both a resident of the Commonwealth and as a master cosmetologist. So does that sound good?
Yes.
All right. So first we'll start with some basic background information, softball questions. but what's your full name, date of birth, and where were you born?
My name is Jennifer Albritton. I was born on April 26, 1995, and I was born in Washington, D.C. at Walter Reed Medical Facility.
Ooh, That feels very relevant.
Yes, it's a little on the nose for right now.
and then where do you live now?
I live in Somerset, Kentucky.
And when did you move there?
We moved here in 2004. My dad had just retired from the Army, and circumstances came into play where he ended up getting a job as a music minister in a church in Somerset, Kentucky. Yeah. So we dropped everything and came here.
Great. So what was it like growing up in Somerset? Can you tell me a little bit about your family life?
Yes. Being a transplant into Somerset, it was definitely a weird thing because so many people from here, especially of my age at that time, had known each other since like birth and had all of these familiarities with each other, and we came in coming from a much larger area with different colloquialisms, and it was just a weird sort of like drop in a bucket type thing. We didn't understand a lot of the ways that people spoke here. The most specific one was yinz. but it was definitely it was weird coming here from Bowie because we lived in Science Hill, which is very small and very rural. Didn't really have neighbors, lived near farms. Mm-hmm. So it was different for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so what did your parents do for a living?
When we were in Maryland, my dad was in the Army Field Band and Soldiers Chorus. He traveled the world singing for the Army. Mm-hmm. And my mom worked as a typesetter for USPA and did that from home from the time that I was born until I was like 17, mm-hmm. in which she decided that she didn't have to be a stay-at-home mom anymore, started working at a bank, and now still works at banks.
Nice. So you mentioned that you were a transplant, but do you feel as if Kentucky has helped shape who you are today? Do you feel like a particular connection to the Commonwealth?
I definitely feel like it's shaped who I am today. I definitely feel like there are a lot of experiences that I've had that that have really molded me and shaped me that I wouldn't have had if I wasn't here. I do feel a connection to the Commonwealth, but only to the point of it being where I've lived most of my life now. I remember the tipping point of like, wow, I've lived here longer than I lived anywhere else. I guess I'm officially a Kentuckian.
Right. So maybe, could you walk me through sort of like the trajectory of your professional career? Like, when did you decide to become a stylist? What did that training look like? And where were some of the first places that you worked?
So when I was a senior in high school, I was in an advanced marketing class at Somerset High School. And I had always been interested in sort of the marketing field. That was kind of what I had had in my brain of like, oh, I'll go off to college. I'll do the college thing. I'll figure it out. I'll probably do something in the realm of marketing because I like design. I like, you know, convincing people to do things. So it's in my scope pretty well. But we had an assignment in that class to go and job shadow. And it was right around prom time. So I went and job shadowed my hairdresser to talk about prom things. Mm-hmm. And in the questions that I had to ask her and talk to her about, all of the things she was telling me were actually really appealing. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm. okay, well, I can stay in Somerset and go to school for free and be done in 2 years and, you know, have it done at that point. And I only missed like a day or two of school, so I graduated early, got out after, you know, 13 or so months, and then I got a job at my salon that I went to, where my hairdresser, where I shadowed her and all that, and she gave me a really good opportunity there. There wasn't a lot of growth there, which when I decided to leave and go to somewhere bigger, I was very nervous about, because I've never been good at quitting jobs. I always feel like I'm letting someone down or somebody's going to be mad at me. And when I told her that I was going to leave, she was like, yeah, I'm surprised you've been here as long as you have. You're bigger than this. So I switched to a salon with 10 stylists that got lots of walk-ins, lots of foot traffic. And I was there for 5 years until I started working post-COVID at a much smaller salon due to COVID.
Right. So you mentioned that you sort of graduated in 13 months.
Yeah.
What sort of like classes or courses were you taking?
So in Kentucky, you don't have to have anything to be a cosmetologist other than cosmetology courses. At the time, it still goes by clock hours versus credit hours. At the time, you had to have 1,800, which at the schedule that our college went through, where it's by semester and you have breaks and all that, it was usually 2 years, 4 semesters. But I got out right after beginning the fourth semester because I took summer classes and went to extra things. I went to a national skills competition for makeup, which was very fun. But that gave me the extra time and experience to be able to graduate early. But now I think it's 1,500 hours. They've changed the rules in the past 5 years and the requirements, and which I think is probably wise.
And when you say they, is it like a governing board?
Yes, there's a state board of cosmetology.
Okay.
Which also at the time that I graduated, you had to have a 6-month apprenticeship, which basically meant that you couldn't booth rent. You had to work as commission or hourly, so you had guaranteed wage instead of just being tossed into being completely your own boss, which gave you a little bit of a safety net financially. And if you mess up or if you have a question, there's somebody always there to answer.
Right.
Which they've taken that away now also, which I don't as much agree with. But for some people, I understand there are some areas that don't do anywhere except booth running.
Right.
In Somerset, there's only one or two places other than chain salons. So it's a mixed bag, but my apprenticeship definitely helped me to make mistakes while it was still kind of on somebody else.
Right. And so what services do you offer now as a result of that training?
I offer all hair services. When I first started, I did makeup and nails too, but after about a year of doing that, it just got to be too many things, master of none, you know? So I decided to stick with what made me the most money and what seemed to have the highest foot traffic, which was doing mostly color. I do cuts also, but most of the time people who come in for color get their cuts there also.
So this is sort of a classic folklorist question, especially in reference to something called occupational folk life. But in your opinion, what makes a good stylist?
Work ethic, because there's a lot of times that you have to, especially when you're starting out to gain your clientele, sit there doing nothing, waiting for people to come to you, or posting online, just, you know, shouting out into the void, hoping that somebody comes in and wants you to do their hair. So there are a lot of times, especially at the beginning, where it's easy to say, oh, well, I'm not doing anything, so I'm going to go home. I'm going to go shopping. I'm going to go do whatever because I'm my own boss. But in being your own boss, it's definitely more important to force yourself into doing the boring things or the more difficult things or the things that you might not necessarily want to be doing for the long term, but give you more clients and word of mouth in that moment.
You mentioned sort of shouting into the void. It's like branding and marketing and sort of like having a presence on social media, something that's like incredibly important to you. Like you have to have that.
Yes. If it wasn't for social media, I wouldn't have most of my clients. Even new clients to this day, so many people will see me on Instagram, or they'll see somebody post about me on Instagram and they'll say, oh my gosh, I saw that you did Holly's hair. I was in her sorority. Please let me do my hair. And I'm like, okay, yes. Social media and marketing and hair was really launching off when I got out of school. So that was definitely something that I utilized, as it was really coming up, especially in this area, because we usually get things like 6 months to a year later than things in big cities. So it was definitely a big help instead of posting in the newspaper or, gosh, I can't even think of other ways that in school they were like, these are the ways to gain your clients, walking around handing out business cards the store. it was a weird thing of, I guess it's a similar idea of getting your name out there, but one is a lot more accessible than the other. Yeah. And you can do while sitting and doing nothing, waiting for somebody to come in at work.
Yeah. Is there something that you feel you do particularly well that, like, every time you ace it, you feel really great?
Color most of the time, like lightening type services. Which is funny because when I was in school, I was really scared of messing up, and I didn't do one head of highlights in beauty school, and I also didn't do a single perm in beauty school, and I've not done a perm since then because I just don't want to. Mm-hmm. It's not something that I have interest in, but color definitely. I think my audience and my clientele definitely is younger, and they want that more, like, beachy, oh, this is just what I look like, instead of covering gray and doing things that are a little bit more old school, that people who might have gotten out of school and started doing hair 5 or 10 years before me, that's mm-hmm. their bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned that, like, your relationship with your clients is incredibly important. Without yes. them, you would not be employed.
Yes.
Could you talk about the process of building your client base and then how you work to maintain a good rapport with those men and women?
Yes. So one of the things that they taught in beauty school that was really important that I didn't take to heart soon enough was the power of rebooking people, of when they leave saying, when do you want to come in next? Let's go ahead and do it. Because I was always very nervous about, like, people committing to coming back. Mm-hmm. I was always fearful that they would be like, oh no, I don't like it and I'm never coming back, because that's how my brain functions. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely been a thing since moving to different salons, and especially post-COVID, that rebooking is very important. And it was definitely made to feel more important when we first came back and things were so busy and so crazy. I got to really, like, hit home to people that it's important now. I can't just get you in anytime, because usually I'm pretty good at keeping my schedule loose enough that I can fit somebody in if they need to come in last minute somewhere. Mm-hmm. I went to a class a couple years ago where the instructor was talking about cutting yourself short, and she asked the whole group, oh, if I came in and said, I need my hair cut, and I can come in any day of the week, anytime, who couldn't get me in for 4 weeks? And all these people, like, raised their hands so smug. And she was like, all of you guys are wrong. Because if you are booking yourself solid and can't make any more money, then you need to charge more, or you need to bump some of your less profitable clients down to junior stylists, to where you can have the opportunity to make more money. Otherwise, this is your ceiling. Mm-hmm. So that really, really, perked my ears about the relationship of staying completely booked versus having a little bit of wiggle room, having a little bit of cushion, mm-hmm. which is nice. But it was definitely weird first getting out of school, being 19 years old, and having to have these 2-hour long conversations with adults. Mm-hmm. It was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Because I knew how to talk to adults, but it was a lot of creating small talk and kind of fishing for, oh, do you have kids? Let's talk about them. Do you have a job? Let's talk. Are you going to school? And there were some people, especially younger people, who I would like throw my fishing hooks out and they'd just be like, nope. Or, yep. Because they also don't know how to talk to people. Right. So I've gotten a lot better at that. I feel like I almost have a script for people that I don't know of, like, talking points to get through to kind of try and start a path of conversation and something to relate to and something to, you know, lock onto. Yesterday I was talking to a client about how our dads made us learn how to drive stick by just putting us in a road and driving on a highway while they explained to us how to drive stick. So it was, you find little nooks and crannies of people's personalities and people's experiences when you dig through those questions that make you more relatable and then make them also want to come back to you.
Right. And so do you have a lot of people who come back
yes.
to you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like I said, when I first started, I was really afraid of asking people to come back. And I also sort of created a paradox of myself where one of my biggest points was being able to do color that people could come back like twice a year for. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I can come back twice a year. So I got so many clients, but then I would only see them twice a year. So maybe I've got 100 people, but I have to create more and more people to cover a weekly basis. So I've definitely kind of strayed away from that at least to a point. Mm-hmm. But you know, you got to get people and share whatever way you can.
So I would say as we begin to shift gears, we can think about how that like one-on-one contact, that physical touch and close proximity was just sort of blown out of the water as a result of COVID. So my question to you then is, what are some of your earliest memories for either hearing about or reading about coronavirus, and how seriously did you take it?
So my earliest memory of it, like specific, I had heard about it like on the internet of people being like, there's a virus in China. And I'd be like, oh, interesting. But my mom, one of her many side hustles is that she works for VIP Kid, which is an online English teaching service for kids in China. Mm-hmm. And basically you get online at like 10 p.m. and they're waking up for school. So you video chat for a half hour and I'm like, this is an apple, this is a book. And she called me and she was like, Jen, they've canceled Chinese New Year. This is serious. Like, this is a big deal because that is not something that they don't celebrate, at least in small groups. This is going to come over and this is going to be bad. And I was like, oh gosh. And that was at the end of last year. And I was like, oh no. And then the end of February, I started hearing about it a little bit more and more, like whispers and stirrings. And, so my best friend's birthday is March 14th. It's Pi Day. And it was the weekend before things in Kentucky shut down. It was when Andy first started having his internet press conferences and was like, we need to start washing our hands more. We need to be mindful of these things. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe I shouldn't go, but also the past 3 years I have been sick on her birthday. Like the one time a year I get sick is always on her birthday. So I was like, I'm not doing it this year. I'm going to go. I'm going to have a good time. We're going to be safe. And the bar that we went to, they usually had board games and things that they would pass out, let people play with. And they were like, oh no, we're not passing anything out. We're not sharing things tonight. We're going to use like disposable cups. I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. Oh no. So, after that night, a friend of mine drove me home that night, and following that weekend, I went to work that Monday, and I started to feel, like, kind of funky. I was like, oh, no. And then the next morning, I woke up with a fever. I was like, oh, no. So my first thought is, I'm dying, because I'm paranoid, and I worry about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So I canceled all my appointments that day. I texted my people for the next day to give them a heads up. And that Tuesday evening, which Tuesday morning is when I had the fever, Andy Beshear announced that he would be shutting down businesses Wednesday at 6. And Wednesday I also woke up with a fever. So I was like, I'm so sorry, everybody. You thought you made it, but mm-hmm. can't get you in. And I had so many people messaging me like, can you fit me in before things shut down? Mm-hmm. I was like, no, I can't. I'm sorry. I am sick. Mm-hmm. Which it turns out that was just a really bad ear infection. and had gotten so bad that I had a fever. But when things first shut down, my boyfriend, who manages a tattoo shop, so he also doesn't really have that stability of a salary or time off, we were talking because both of our jobs were getting shut down at the same time. We hadn't planned for it because how could you? Mm-hmm. I had my tax money put back. So I was like, okay, there is money. It's mm-hmm. just kind of not there for spending. But if we need food, we can eat. Who knows? Maybe this will go 3 weeks. I remember us saying, hopefully this goes 3 weeks, but we can probably survive four. Mm-hmm. And 12 weeks later, we were being asked back to work. But thankfully, Kentucky was able to extend unemployment to non-wage workers mm-hmm. because we are not technically eligible for unemployment in being self-employed and not paying in for every paycheck. So that was definitely a big relief as far as the ease of quarantine went, mm-hmm. which the rest of quarantine I was thrilled about because that just meant that I got to be very introverted for 3 months mm-hmm. and have a staycation, if you will. Mm-hmm. Obviously around not good circumstances, but it was nice to, in a really chaotic time, have very few things to personally worry about. Mm-hmm. Like, I can worry about all the things around me, but none of them direct the inside of my house.
So it became real for you when your salon closed down. Was there sort of like a time before that? I've heard people mention when Bashir sort of issued that state of emergency or mm-hmm. sort of like the mask mandate. But did it sort of come down to you not being able to go in when you were like, whoa, this is it? Or was it something else?
The state of emergency was probably the point that I knew that we were going to get shut down. Because at that point, other states had already started shutting down salons. And my boyfriend and I both know so many people that were giving us the whispers of, I know somebody who's in Frankfurt, and they say that things are going to get shut down Monday. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh gosh, things are going to get shut down Monday. And then Monday passes, and it's like, I heard that by the end of the week, you're not going to be allowed to leave your home, and the National Guard's going to be patrolling the roads. So at that point, I knew that something was going to happen, mm-hmm. And I assumed that it was going to be something to the extent of, like, no social things, mm-hmm. no movie theaters, and hopefully at that point, no salons or tattoo shops either, because we're in people's faces, and that felt very risky at that point.
I personally saw some things on social media for different stylists who might have been, like, caught. Is that a thing that happened, or do you know anyone who sort of was practicing when they shouldn't have been?
I know a few people who were making house calls. Mm-hmm. They weren't really advertising it, but like I said, Somerset's very small, so word gets around. Mm-hmm. More than that, people at other salons were offering to send home color kits with people so they could do their own color at home, which didn't sit well with me to begin with. Mm-hmm. But one of them made a post that said, not our client, don't worry, we've got you covered. I was like, oh no. So that was definitely, a jarring thing. I had one client that I sent color home with because she's in the medical field mm-hmm. and she was like, please, I have to work and people are seeing me. Mm-hmm. Give me one thing to give joy. I was mm-hmm. like, you got it. I got you.
Color kit.
But for people who, were also just quarantined, like mm-hmm. nobody is going to see your roots. There's no reason for you to shower at all. You can just not do anything and nobody will know.
You sort of mentioned going on unemployment.
Yes.
So what was that process like, and were other stylists sort of facing the same thing? Was this something that you guys were talking about together in a group?
Yes. We had, at the salon that I worked at previously, the one with the 10 stylists, we had a group message on Facebook, and as soon as they announced that unemployment would be extended to non-wage workers, we all signed up, and it's funny, I was sort of the library of tax knowledge, even though I'm not, just because I read things thoroughly. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were asking me a lot of questions about how to do things when they were laid out in front of them, but that's okay. I don't mind. But I was very fortunate in being a person who I signed up, I got approved, 2 weeks later I had money in my money in the bank. Which I know that a lot of people weren't so fortunate in that. We know somebody who got all of their unemployment money like 3 weeks ago.
Oh no.
But it was so much money all dropped into their account at once, which thankfully their wife got regular unemployment, so their bills were paid, everything was fine, but they were like, what do I do now that I'm rich with all of this money?
There's a comma in that bank account.
Yes, yeah. Yes, there is. but the unemployment definitely helped, helped put stability in a very unstable situation, which once again helped to sort of separate the worries about coronavirus and the worries about me, instead of worrying about everything together as one giant, big, scary question mark.
Right. So during quarantine, before you went back to work, were you able to keep your day structured? Or was, like, how was your day-to-day routine affected in response to the pandemic? I know you mentioned it was a staycation, but were you... I've heard sort of people mention that they just felt like really driftless, or they didn't know sort of like where to put their time and energy into doing something. Did you feel similarly, or were you able to step back and...
I could have made myself a schedule, but I'm very good at not doing that. The whole idea of like, I feel driftless, that lasted for maybe a week until I realized that it was going to be a long-term thing. And then I just thought, oh, I can just not do anything and be fine with that. I've always been a person who's able to just loaf and enjoy being at home, enjoy watching TV all day, or you know, taking a walk. We took a lot of walks before it got really hot, and then we stopped because it got really hot. Both my and my boyfriend's birthdays were over quarantine, so we, you know, ordered takeout steaks from Chili's and celebrated. But most of it was just spent, we had a small group of friends that we played D&D with once a week who also were quarantined at home and didn't see any other people. So we kept our groups small and personal, but didn't make it to where we were completely closed off from our close friends. A funny thing is that my dad took quarantining very seriously, which I did not expect because he's a very tough guy. And on Easter, he and my stepmom love hosting. They love big family dinners, and Easter is one of their favorites. And obviously we couldn't do that because even though that for me and my dad, we're the only two of our family that live in the state, my stepfamily is vast. And there are lots of kids and babies, and it was not a good thing. So we did an Easter FaceTime or a Zoom chat with the family, and my stepmom still fixed food and had us come and pick it up in to-go boxes, which was
so nice.
Very nice. But when I went to pick it up, I went to the door, which was locked, which was weird because they don't lock their doors. They live in the middle of nowhere. And I knocked on the door and was like, what's going on? And my dad said, back up. He said, I'm sorry, I've not been around anyone since school's closed down, because he works at Berea College, which was the first college to send people home. He said, I'm not about to ruin it with you.
Oh my gosh.
He said, I'm sorry. And I was like, no, that's a great thing. I'm very happy that this is your response to this.
Right.
And he was like, I'll hug you one day.
Did you have any sort of other emotional response to being in quarantine, to self-isolating, or...
At the beginning, it was a very weird, I think I was more worried about when we were coming back because, like I said, we had that expectation of, oh, well, it can't go longer than 3 weeks. So at that point, it was just a matter of, oh gosh, do I reschedule clients? Do I even worry about it? What do I tell people when they say they want to get in when I come back? Do I make a list? Do we wear masks? What is it? And then once we got past the point of, oh, this is going to go on for a while, I was able to kind of push those questions into the future to let future Jen worry about, which she did. And I was able to just have very small emotional times, but none that were just crazy, because I didn't have any outside, outside environmental things affecting my emotions, which is usually what makes me, anxious or depressed. I was like, I live in a bubble, and it's wonderful. I have my dog, I have my cat, I have my boyfriend, and that's all I need.
Mm-hmm. So, were clients still trying to reach you during this time? Were you able to talk with them, or, like, what did that
sort of look like? Most of my clients... really all of my clients text me, because I don't like talking on the phone. Mm-hmm. So some of them were texting me seeing if I was okay. Some of them were texting seeing if they could buy gift cards, because I had a lot, like I said, one who works in the medical field, she was like, I get paid no matter what happens, so I want to go ahead and prepay for my next service. Mm-hmm. And I had a couple people buy gift cards in that way, which was really nice, really sweet. I had a couple people just Venmo me, you know, $25, mm-hmm. which was very kind, but mostly I had people texting me and saying, I want to support you when you get back in, put me on the list. So I started a list, mm-hmm. and by the end of quarantine, that list had about 80 people on it.
Oh my goodness.
Which was what future Jen worried about.
Right. So I guess sort of describe what it felt like to return to work. Did you think it was too early, or what were yes. future Jen's biggest concerns at this point?
I felt that it was too early. I felt that not enough other fields had gone back, but I kind of expected us to go back at the point that we did, because so many people were so vocal about, we need our haircut, we need our roots done, and stylists need to get back to work. And I was like, please don't speak for me. Mm-hmm. I'm fine without. So that was definitely a worry, because it was like a week after doctor's offices went back. I was like, we are not that essential. I understand that people have bills to pay and people all of that, and that's stressful and hard, but also what's it worth? So we went back, and I have asthma, so I'm high risk, and that made me very nervous, because at that point it was also really hard to get a hold of masks. You could order them from Etsy, and maybe they'd come in, like, 6 weeks, so I started sewing masks, and I made a lot of really bad ones before I made a couple good ones, and I went back for 1 day, 2 days, I went back for 2 days, and got really anxious about being around so many people, and I have a lot of high-risk clients, so the second that one person around me did something that wasn't exactly correct, I was like, oh no, I'm going to kill one of my clients, and I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So I went back home and stayed home another 2 weeks after that, because being high-risk, I was able to stay on unemployment even after salons opened back up. And then after 2 weeks, I went back in, and I stayed for about another week and a half, which at that point is when I put my 2 weeks in to go to a smaller salon, mm-hmm. which luckily the owner of the bigger salon that I worked at is a very close friend of mine. And as soon as I started thinking about leaving, which was when I went back home the first time, I was like, hey, here's where my brain is. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I just want you to be in the conversation. And she's like, I get it. Mm-hmm. Totally understand. Just keep me updated. Mm-hmm. So when I gave her my 2 weeks, she was like, I'm really sorry that this is the way that it is, but I understand that that's the way that it is. And it was the most smooth leaving of a job I've ever had, which was very nice. Mm-hmm. But then I ended up at the salon that I'm at now, which only has 3 stylists. And the area that I'm in has it's basically its own room. There's a wall between me and other people. Everyone's very, very like wary about cleanliness and mask wearing and not overdoing it, not having a million people in the shop. So that's been, that's eased a lot of my work concerns.
Mm-hmm. Were you getting a lot of support from the state board? Were sort of like directives coming down from them, or was it sort of like a free for all?
It was very, uninformed. They posted their board meeting on Facebook Live, because technically the meetings are public, so people can come watch, but if they can't do them in person, they were just posting their Zoom video as a live video, and people could, like, type in questions. And all of their topics were about sanitation and cleanliness and what are the rules, what should be the rules. And most of them, if somebody brought up something extra, they were like, well, you know, I don't know if that, maybe we should suggest that people do that. And it was a lot of just kind of going back and forth of, I don't know, maybe we'll do that, maybe we won't. We'll just ask that people do that. Because there are a lot of sanitation procedures that were already technically in our roles, but a lot of people didn't follow, which I was as guilty as that of that as the next person, because a lot of them are very sterile, like very, very excessive. So if you go by the book, then you're completely clean. But if you want to be able to have quick turnover between clients and save money on combs and brushes and supplies, because you're not completely submerging them in like sterile sanitizer every service, don't want to break them down so quickly, then that was something that you didn't really do, but now you do. So a lot of the state board was, and they're great, like they were definitely trying and they were put in a hard spot, but it was a lot of just unsureness. And then the meeting was over and they were like, all right, hope you got your answers.
So since returning to work, I guess either, you know, the first time or at your new salon, so how have you adapted to meet the needs of your clients? Did you have a lot, like, follow you from one salon to the next?
Yeah. I think all. I've actually, the owner of the old shop, who I'm good friends with, we kind of back and forthed a lot of clients. Like, if she was out for something, then I would take people who needed to get in, and if I was out for something, like I broke my leg last year, she covered a lot for me. So we had a nice and fluid relationship in that sense. So I've actually gotten a couple of her overflow, and I've sent her a couple people for, she does microblading for eyebrows. So that's been nice as far as like the fluidity between salons. But as far as people who are my clients, they've all followed me, mm-hmm. and most of them like it better being in a small spot because I have a lot of high risk clients and. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice to be more private anyway.
And so you're super mindful of, like, cleanliness or sanitizing?
Yes.
And,
okay. Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think. The only person whose hair I've done without a mask on was my mom's, and it was a day that nobody else was in the shop, and I was like, yeah, we spent a lot of time together already. Mm-hmm. And I sanitize between every person, so it's not like there are any surfaces or anything. I have one client who I allow to not wear a mask during services because she is a lung cancer survivor and only has one lung. Mm-hmm. So she sometimes can't breathe through a mask, but I know that she's more cautious than me with everywhere else. Mm-hmm. So, thankfully all of my clients have been very, very mindful and very understanding about mask wearing. There have been a handful that they'll come in without one. And I'm like, go to wear your mask. And they're like, oops, sorry, okay. Mm-hmm. But I've not had anyone argue it with me because I'm pretty open about my views on science and rule following.
So do you feel like there's like a noticeable difference in the way that you approach your job now?
Yeah. One of the things that we can't do anymore, or we're not supposed to be doing, is it's different than what it sounds like, but double booking. Because sometimes you would have somebody that you'd put color on and then you'd go and sit them over, like, under a dryer tray or something and then do a haircut while they're processing or put color on somebody else while they're processing and just sort of, like, stack back and forth people so you can do more people in a day and make more money. So with sanitation, you can't do that anymore because you have to have contact time and enough time to clean every surface between every client. So doing that has made me not overwork myself in that way and also has forced me to put more time in between every client so I'm not so stressed out. I can eat lunch if I want to, and sometimes I can go use the bathroom when I need to instead of just being so busy all day that you look at the watch and it's like, oh, it's been 10 hours. Because that's, you know, you gotta hustle, you gotta make more money, and it's definitely become a lot more self-focused now instead of money focused before, mm-hmm. which has been a really nice thing.
Right.
Also being off work and realizing how little stress I was under has made me give myself a bigger break,
mm-hmm.
in addition to that.
Right. Do you think these are changes that will stick?
For me, they will. Mm-hmm. I know other people who have already gone back to being crazy busy and loving it, but I'm at a point where the money that I make is to survive with, and to, you know, do nice things every once in a while. But this year, it's not like I'm going to be going on vacation. It's not like I'm going to be going to any sporting events or concerts. So I've been able to just kind of exist and enjoy my own company a little bit better, which has been very nice.
Oh. So this is sort of moving away from your professional life and more into your personal life. Mm-hmm. Nothing too deep. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we had talked about this a little bit earlier, but when thinking about local and state government responses to the pandemic, what do you think has worked and what do you think hasn't worked?
Well, I think that our state government has done a really good job of trying their best. Mm-hmm. I think that all of the things that they've put into effect, however successful or unsuccessful they've been, I feel like they've definitely been with the best interests of everyone, or of the majority of people that they can have. Because I feel like you can't have it good for everybody. You can't. There are too many different circumstances. There are too many different things happening in people's lives. So for someone like me, who staying home and staying safe was very calming, there are some people who they maybe didn't get their unemployment and they were like, we have to go back to work. Or they have their kids at home from school, and they've had their kids at home from school since March, and they're like, oh my gosh, please let me send my kids somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I don't have kids, so I would also want to send kids somewhere else. So it's hard to say what other people's circumstances should be, but I think the state government has definitely done their best to benefit as many people's health and safety as they can. Mm-hmm. I think that I've seen a lot of local governments who haven't been taking it as seriously and who have been, you know, just doing things very willy-nilly when there's still record weeks every week in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. I think that some people are being a little irresponsible, but, you know, at the same time, it's people's jobs to make money. That's not really the way that I'm wired, but that's why I'm not in charge of cities. Mm-hmm. It's a tough thing, because it's easy to say, oh, well, you have to get the economy back moving, but at what cost? And also, you got to keep people safe, but at what cost? But I definitely think that state government has been doing a more responsible job than a lot of local governments in Kentucky, especially in very small areas, because they think that being rural makes them unable to have people get sick and die, which I think is a little small-minded.
Yeah. So you would agree that you do see sort of a direct impact on these communities being affected by decision-making from
Yes.
local leaders.
Yes.
Yeah. So as we begin to wrap up, and I guess this is sort of a two-part question for Jen as a stylist and Jen as sort of a private citizen. But if you're thinking about changes or shifts in your life that you've made as a way to cope mm-hmm. through a global pandemic, and there's always sort of this dialogue that's going back to normal, or there's the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of wondering what your personal takeaways have been over the course of the last 7 months. So what have you learned?
Well, I'm really happy that everyone's a little more clean now. Mm-hmm. It's definitely exposed parts of my daily life where I'm like, I should be a little bit more sanitary, because mm-hmm. I was also a kid who was, like, raised in mud, so I was like, what's the worst that can happen? And now I'm like, terrible things can happen. So I think I found a balance in those two things. I've definitely realized the instability of my job in these unprecedented times. I've returned to school to get something that's a little bit more stable in my back pocket by chance something like this happens again, or like I said, last year I broke my leg, which also put me out of work, which I didn't have unemployment for, I didn't have disability for. There have definitely been some shining lights on the holes of my industry, especially the part of my industry that I work in being self-employed. But it's also really, in being a hairdresser, made me realize how important it is to put money back and to, you know, not spend it as soon as you get it. I found apps that take out savings for you and being a little bit more responsible that way. And then I've also been a little bit more thoughtful of my own time in not working myself to death every day just to, you know, make an extra buck. Because I think that it's really put into perspective the things that actually matter versus the things that everyone tells you matter.
Mm-hmm.
Tells you matters. You know.
Sure. And so are these sort of conversations that you're having with, like, close family members and friends? Do you feel like a lot of people in your group feel similarly?
Yes, yes. I'm very lucky to surround myself with mostly people who see the same side of this as I do. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, I've not been on Facebook since the beginning of this year, thank goodness, because I don't think I could have dealt with it. But every once in a while, I'll hear somebody else's client or hear somebody in the store talking about how, oh, you know, it'll be gone after the election, or, you know, it's a hoax anyway. And I think that if I was surrounded with people who thought so differently than me, then it would be a lot more stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, the people that I surround myself with in, like, my close friends and my family, they are at least rule followers enough that it doesn't feel unsafe to mm-hmm. sometimes see small people, small groups of people. And it's been a nice thing to be able to really reassess the people who care about those around them more than themselves. Because
mm-hmm.
I think another thing through this is a big light has been shined on people who would rather be comfortable than worry about somebody else's health, which has been a struggle for me to mm-hmm. understand.
Right.
But you gotta keep your friends close.
And so I guess my final question is, we've talked about future Jen, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you right now could maybe Ooh. Give like a piece of advice or some sort of like warning to Jen in February or March, is there something that you can sort of like, this is what needs to be done?
I really don't know.
Right, like who could have sort of guessed?
Yeah, I think that even if I was like, better stock up on hand sanitizer, like I don't think that on a personal level, looking back at the year, I don't think on a personal level there are many things that I could have changed
mm-hmm.
That would have made a difference in my own life or in the people's lives directly around me. Because I think that all you can do is your best, and try as hard as you can to be kind to those around you. And I like to think that I do a pretty good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you buy toilet paper earlier, I guess,
right.
Stock up on things that people are gonna buy out for months.
So wild to think.
It's a weird year. It's, I guess, cherish the times that you're able to, like, go to a bar and feel good about it.
Right.
But, watch a movie.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
All right, so before we close, is there anything else that you would like to add or feel like we didn't get to cover? Sort of any final takeaways?
I don't think so. I think that's
mm-hmm.
it.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to give your oral history interview with me.
No problem.
So thanks, Jen.